There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past, and when it breaks. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT. This is me, Dede Denslow. I have former BBC journo, come author, come investigative journalist, and a bit of a conspiracy theorist himself, by all accounts. Although I didn't mean to insult you there, Tony. How are you, mate?
Yeah, well, listen, it's not an insult, really, to be called a conspiracy theorist these days. Investigative journalist is what I am, and BBC was a very interesting place to work when I was there, 1989 till 1994, because the director general had been sacked around about, I think it was 87, by Thatcher through Victor Rothschild. Actually, it was Victor Rothschild who it's all down there in Marmaduke Hussey, who was the chairman of the BBC at the time's autobiography. He explains that Victor Rothschild approached him and said, can you sack the director general? Because they were doing programmes which were critical of Thatcher, as the BBC used to do. So I was there in the few years after that, where I could witness throughout the corporation the good people being sacked, and rather, you know, nepotism coming in and rather useless people being put in their place. Now, you know, the job of a radio producer where I was working in, it was called Greater London Radio, it's quite important. We had a listenership in the millions in London. It was one of the, and if anyone listening was living in London in the late 80s, early 90s, you'll remember GLR. We had Tommy Walker grilling all the politicians, which was great fun. He was very good at it. We had Tommy Vance in the evening, Johnny Walker in the lunchtimes, Tommy Vance in the evenings, doing a really good drive time program, absolutely on the case with almost every single story of interest to Londoners. And we were competing with LBC, and we were beating them. You know, we were beating them to most of the stories. And so it was a different, completely different corporation I was working in. And I joined it thinking, you know, great, this is like being a civil servant that's against the government, you know. And we were, you know, we would toe the government line sometimes. But say, for example, in the first Gulf War, we got on some guy who lived around the corner in Marylebone High Street, who was a big fan of Saddam Hussein, right? So he'd written a book about Saddam and he thought he was great. So we wheeled him into the studio and sat. He was there saying, well, actually, Saddam is a really great guy, you know, and blah, blah, blah. That's whilst the first Gulf War was taking place. So that you obviously won't see today, you know, somebody saying how wonderful Putin is on the BBC. So that was, and in a way, I think, you know, because today's BBC is just an appalling place. I've still got quite a lot of friends working in there and they have to keep their heads down. It's a very difficult place to tell the truth. And obviously, you know, for many people, it's about paying the mortgage. A lot of people have got out because of that. It's just too much stress. But there's also a lot of people still in the corporation who are just trying to do what they can. In other words, they're very much aware that the corporation is now being used by the government for mass propaganda. But they know that if they leave, someone will take their place who's younger, more naive, and is going to, you know, produce even more nonsense. And they do from time to time do some good programs, amazingly. Like there was one recently about eugenics. It was a two-part series about eugenics, which was actually really hard-hitting. And the reporter was a guy who had something, I think it was motor neurone disease or something. And he was going around to all these eugenicists saying, well, so you think I should never have been born, you know, which is quite, you know. So they do some good stuff. And, you know, the thing is, without them, the whole field would be clear for the big commercial broadcasters to just, you know, totally do what they wanted and in commercial interest. So, you know, BBC, X, but very much still an investigative journalist. And by the way, on your news bulletin, I heard Patrick Henningsen talking about the lab leak theory. Look, this is a very important thing. I mean, I discuss this with journalists around the world. And I'm in no doubt that the COVID-19, originally SARS-CoV-2, did come from Wuhan. It was actually an engineered virus. And in fact, the New Delhi scientists in their university, they published the genome on the 30th of January 2020. We reported that on our program because it was reported by Zero Hedge, who were then kicked off Twitter that weekend. And they actually had the Chinese published the genome. These New Delhi scientists had a good old look at it, and it's out there. BioRivix, I think it's called, BioRivix, on BioRivix. And they said this is unlikely to have occurred naturally, and it's got an AIDS and a SARS spliced into it. So that's what they were saying. And, of course, we know that the World Military Games, there were a lot of people came. People remember this, October 2019, loads of these soldiers were going back home from the World Military Games, young enough not to really be killed, obviously killed by COVID, but to take it back maybe to their elderly relatives and to start spreading it around the world. The other thing to say is we here in Bristol, I still know some people, as I said at the BBC, the Natural History Unit brought COVID back to Bristol from Switzerland, a film crew did. And on the 17th of December 2019, it started spreading at the BBC, right? And within 3 or 4 days, most of the staff were off with it. Now, they haven't told you that on the BBC. And that's how it spreads. It began to spread in the West Country in December 2019, thanks to the BBC, which the BBC then never reported. So, you know, there's a few things that, you know, we as I think we've got to be really clear. The reason that there is this, I believe, PSYOP out there saying that COVID wasn't manufactured in a lab. It certainly, this is one. This is what those companies, you know, the bioweapons people do. This is exactly what they do. They get a thing like the common cold and they splice something really deadly onto it. That's their little game. Is because this distracts you from the criminality of what the Americans and the Chinese in collaboration did by. You know, this gain of function research, that's what they were doing. Peter Daszak, EcoHealth Alliance, these people were creating deadly viruses. They've been booted out of Obama booted them out of the United States. So I really have to tell you, I'd love to have a proper debate with Patrick about the actual origins of SARS-CoV-2, because it had such a massive effect around the world. And I think we've basically bottomed the story out around the world. I mean, Fox News did quite a good job on that. And various other people about what the actual origins were. And so, of course, it was also engineered in a way that there was the lockdowns, extensive lockdowns were not necessary. And the IMF basically bribed countries around the world to take the Kool-Aid, you know, drink the Kool-Aid, have all this money from the IMF, have a lockdown, you know, everything will be fine. And of course, some countries just refuse to do that, like Belarus and Sweden, yeah. And many of them have much better outcomes. And in fact, countries without a highly advanced medical system and media propaganda, like in Africa, etc., fared a lot better than we did.
Yeah, Nepal didn't have a COVID outbreak or a COVID pandemic because they couldn't afford the tests. And it's the same in Africa. They couldn't afford the tests, so no one knew they even had it. And I have actually, back in the day when we, before me and Patrick both got kicked off Twitter, we are both back on there now, but this is a couple of years ago, me and him did have an online conversation, you know, in DMs about the origins, and he was insistent that it was part of a narrative, the lab leak, to try and hide obfuscate, the original reasons and intent, and that's why it was out there. And I'm like, I actually believe the lab leak theory. I first heard it from Paul Joseph Watson, you know, another noted conspiracy theorist who seems to get things right before the mainstream media. Maybe that's why they don't like him. So I actually do buy into the lab leak theory. I'm sure if I check the live chat, there'll be people saying, no, it's not true, or the virus doesn't exist. There is that whole, is it flu rebranded? Because the whole flu deaths disappeared during the pandemic. And now flu, welcomed by quite a few people. I quite like the idea of flu returning. Mm. It seems to be back and killing people again. We're going to go to a break now so we can maximize the amount of time I've got in the next segment, Tony, because you told me a story last night about Portland Down. We're talking about the viruses. Yeah. I was going to save this to the end of our conversation, but that's fine. We'll talk about it now because it does add some weight into some evidence to what you have just said. So please Stay right with us on TNT Radio. This is me, DD Denslow. I'm here talking to investigative journalist Tony Gosling. We were just talking about the origins of the virus, and I've seen some comments come through. Yeah, they're just using it so they can perpetuate war with China. I agree. I think that they are going to still use it to perpetuate war with China. It doesn't matter whether it's got a Chinese origin. Tony's just said they're working in collaboration. Maybe they want a war with China for everybody, and they are in on it right from the beginning. But you also told me a story last night that adds some evidence to what you was just saying about a conversation you had with someone regarding Portland Down, UK's own sort of bio lab, bioweapons facility. So could you tell a story, please?
Well, yeah, and also must say, USA and China are two sides of the same coin. You know, you can look at the secret societies in China and in the United States. I mean, they're all powerful, basically, particularly the Masons in the US and all the presidents. You know, this is, I think, the stitch up is that, you know, we have been told this is a different system. Of course, it's not. It's just a pretend. They're pretend adversaries. I mean, there are various bits of evidence. I mean, this Wuhan lab stuff is clear evidence that at the top level, the US and China are one. You know, there they are working exactly together to do this thing. And it's brilliant that that the truth actually did come out about that. It's amazing, really, because they put a lot of effort into keeping it secret and lots of cover stories still being circulated. And the other thing is your ad, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about that, but that was brilliant. Yeah. I mean, about JFK, absolutely right. And if anyone wants to do a bit more digging into JFK, we've bottomed that one out too, really, which is the CIA. James Files was people come across him, he was a hitman for the Chicago mob. He fought in Korea in the 82nd Airborne Division. He was recruited by the mafia in Chicago to be their hitman. And he'd also been involved in the Bay of Pigs, which was the potential invasion of Cuba by these Cuban separatists. The Americans had been training up, so he was involved in training them as well. And when Kennedy pulled the plug on the Bay of Pigs and or the air cover and everything on it, and it turned into such a disaster, he was really annoyed. So he was quite happy to blow. He said it's just like to me, it was just doing a job like anybody. It's like taking out the garbage. And he talks very clearly about how, you know, they were recruited by David Attlee Phillips at the CIA, who was their controller, to go and kill Kennedy in 1963. So this is, you know, that's why it was done, and that's who did it. And of course, Lyndon Johnson was very much involved, who took over after Kennedy. Anyway, so back to Portland Down. Portland Down, all the Western countries have had this kind of biological chemical weapons programs going. The military, it's very secretive. It's frowned on. In the UK, it's part of the defence establishment. There's a kind of organisation, infrastructure establishment, that's part of them, which is runs Portland Down. It's just north of Salisbury, Portland Down itself. Anyone that's interested in it, a friend of mine, Matthew Williams, who lives in Devizes, Matt Williams has done quite a lot of, like, where he basically gets his car or just walks into Portland Down and gets film in there. Yeah, so he's done an amazing job in sort of trying to open up what is really going on. And there's also the Home Affairs correspondent for the BBC here in the West Country, Steve Brody. He's my old boss, actually. He was a news editor I worked under. He blew the story about the wide open about the Ministry of Defence recruiting people and then killing them at Portland Down. And that was court cases have dragged on for about 15 years in that story. Several people had life-changing injuries. And there was a saying after a while within the military, and it said, don't volunteer for anything, especially if it's at Portland Down. And so there's been all sorts of crimes committed there by these maniacs, basically putting people in gas chambers and seeing how long it takes them to start croaking. When I was working, I worked for the BBC in Salisbury, a very nice little studio next to the Arts Centre there, for about a year or so. And one of the pieces I got asked to do was There was a place called the Harvard Hospital, which is south of Salisbury. Now, I'm thinking this is probably around about 1993. And this hospital was about to be demolished to make way for housing. It had been created in the Second World War by the Americans as an American hospital. And after the war, it was kind of, well, what do we do with it now? Portendown took it over. And they started using it as something. And you can see these quaint old videos up on YouTube. The Common Cold Research Center. Well, what they're doing is they're advertising, oh, come and, you know, we'll look after you and feed you, and we'll even pay you a little bit to catch a cold and see what happens. And nobody was told that this was actually biological weapons research that was being done for about 30, 35 years or so at the Harvard Hospital. And it was actually a big sign on the outside of it saying Common Cold Research Center. And it's on the other side of Salisbury, so maybe people didn't make the connection with Portendown. But the guy that was that I interviewed after I switched my tape recorder off, we used to have these great big Ewer tape recorders in those days, big heavy things, reel to reel. And after I switched it off, he said, "Well, you know, I can't say this on there, but this was all Portendown running this." And he was intimating, you know, he's one of those people who spoke kind of between the lines a little bit, but he was intimating that, well, the common cold was interesting to Portendown because it was such an amazingly contagious disease. And so clearly, if you're going to create a deadly virus, a really good biological weapon, good in inverted terms, inverted commas, you need to pin it to something which is very, very contagious. Now, of course, you know, these people were maniacs. They are maniacs. But, I was only just recently looking at the Second World War. The Americans had a massive shipment of mustard gas they brought over to ready to use in World War II. And guess what? The Germans, Bari in Italy, on the east coast of Italy, the Germans bombed the ship. And the mustard gas came out, killed loads and loads of people. And the city of Bari, if you were to go there now, you'll still find people who were elderly people who were injured by the mustard gas pouring out of this American ship that got bombed by the Germans. So they were very much in the you know, the idea of that all this stuff, oh, we were just simply not going to do it anymore, is total nonsense. And I think, you know, I think actually maybe part of the development of COVID was done on research done from the Common Cold Research Center, our very own Portendown. I know the it's very secretive there. Another thing people don't understand, because Prince Charles is the honorary head
King
of
Charles.
All three main intelligence. Sorry, King Charles. Yeah. At the time, it was obviously Prince Charles. But you see, he's not only World Economic Forum. He's trying to put himself in a very, very powerful position. He's been doing the negotiations for the Northern Ireland Protocol over the last few days. The Queen would never have done that. You just get on with it, guys, you know. But no, he's got to have his finger in the pot. And of course, if anyone's looked at the deal which they've given the Irish, it's rubbish. They've just said to the Irish, well, you know, you may as well just be in the EU, mightn't you? And everyone's mm-hmm. trying to talk it up. Oh, it's a brilliant deal. It's a fantastic mm-hmm. deal. It's not. So Charles has been very, very active, I think, in all of these areas. He's a control freak, really. He wants to have his, rather than be the sort of guy that goes and does shooting, plays golf or whatever, and then if there's a real problem with the country, he can come in and do a bit of fixing, you know, which is what the Queen was kind of like. He wants to have his finger in all the pies. And so anyway, that's my little tale about Portendown. And I think if anyone is near Salisbury, you can actually go to that area just to the south of the city, and there's still a plaque up saying that this is where the Harvard Hospital and the Common Cold Research Center, it's on the entrance to the housing estate on the left-hand side, used to be. But I just thought, I mean, and this happens a lot in journalism. You are doing something for the public, and the people you're recording, particularly in broadcasting, know what you're doing. But then as soon as you switch off, maybe they'll tell you a little bit more. And I think this is particularly true, actually, with cameramen, camera women in broadcasting, is that they see a lot of stuff. So if you know anybody that's been a broadcast cameraman for, you know, 20 years or something, they know everything we know, pretty much, because they see all the stuff that goes on after the camera's switched off.
If you're listening and you are a cameraman who's worked for any of the mainstream media on big and important stories, Darren@tntradio.live, send me an email. I'll get you on and you can tell us all the dirty little secrets that we don't hear when we're watching the BBC. We're going to a break now, and I'm sort of doing my plan in reverse here, Tony. So we're sort of going chronologically backwards. The next thing I want to pick up on is you mentioned the royal family. You've also got you've done written books about secret groups, the occult, and 9/11 and the Bilderbergers. So that's where I'm going next. So please stay right with us after this quick break. TNT, this is me, DD Denzel, on Digging Deeper. I'm talking to Tony Gosling. We've just been talking about Portland Down. I've got some questions coming through. Quick shout out to Rob Howe. He did his NBC instruction course there back in 98. And then I'm assuming that's nuclear, biological, and chemical instruction course. And then someone's Skippy has brought up Novichok. Which was the nerve agent that apparently killed the Skipples. Do you think Portland Down were obviously involved in that? He's holding his hands up in the air. Am I saying something stupid here?
Okay, so really important, actually, because, of course, Salisbury was where I felt like when that sort of story happened, this is on my patch, my old patch. And, okay, so Novichok. I've got quite a few contacts I was talking to about all that. The conclusion, I mean, this is, I'm afraid, just speculation, but it's pretty good speculation, is that Novichok was actually a bullshit chemical, if I'm allowed to say that, which was designed to see if somebody was leaking stuff to the other side, right? So this was something that the Russians pretended that they'd designed and made, and it looked all real, you know, like all the chemical, this is how you make it and everything. But actually, if you try and make it, it doesn't work. And they were using this. But Russians are very smart at all this intelligence work. They were giving it to somebody that they suspected of passing stuff to the other side. And because they'd already, that's us, yeah? So, and although, because they'd already infiltrated the other side, they would know if it had got through. Yeah. So what they do is they make up these like fake things that look real. And this is what you would do in wartime. This is what deception planners do, psychological warfare officers do. And so I think the most likely thing with Novichok is that it's actually a fake chemical weapon that probably wouldn't, right, you know, if you tried to make it, wouldn't do anything because it was used like that anyway. So, but anyway, of course, fentanyl, poisoned fentanyl, really bad fentanyl was people may know, was circulating in Salisbury at the time. I mean, there's lots and lots to say about that Skripal thing. None of it really makes any sense. What's happened to Skripal? Julia Skripal, have they been killed off? They were, okay, the real motive for it all was that Skripal was getting annoyed in Britain. He'd come over from the Russians, and his daughter was here too. And he was saying, he'd written a letter to Putin saying, if you can pardon me, I'd love to come back because I've had enough of it here. And that article was out there. So obviously the British don't want him going back over there because he's privy to loads of stuff the British intelligence have been up to. And so they did this as a way to make sure that Skripal stayed here in the UK. And, you know, so I think that's, you know, and that maybe he may have been killed. Who knows? The other very important fact is that the guy who was running Salisbury General Hospital at the time wrote a letter to the Times saying nobody has been brought in here or treated for chemical weapons, chemical poisoning, nobody. And they said that they've been, you know, because the people who've been poisoned in the city center, in the city center, have been taken straight to the hospital, which is quite close to the center. And nobody had. He said nobody's been brought in here. So that, this is the power of controlling the press, is you can put out a story which is absolute nonsense. In fact, when I was in Salisbury, I knew a guy. I was sharing a house with a guy that worked at Boscombe Down, which is a RAF, old big RAF place where they do the RAF research there, and where they designed the bouncing bomb in the Second World War and things like that. But anyway, he worked there. He was under official secrets, obviously. But I remember sitting watching the news with him one evening. And at one point of it, it was something to do with Boscombe Down on the news, and he just burst out laughing. And I said, look, you don't need to tell me. It's just rubbish, isn't it? What they say, yeah, it's complete rubbish. And so you often find that with the mainstream media in the West, is that anybody that's actually close to the story knows that what we're being told is complete nonsense. And they rely on people's lack of knowledge in order to bamboozle them.
And get then, and then for those people who've been, you know, watching the 6 o'clock news or whatever time it comes on, I don't know what the BBC schedule is because I don't watch mainstream television at all, and I haven't for over 20 years, 25 years now. They go out and repeat, don't they? And they have conversations. Oh, did you hear about that Skripal case? Did you hear about Novichok? And they all do that whole repeating process. And that's how sort of fake news becomes fact within the public sphere. I have a question. It's Russian related. Why do we have a space station flying around the Earth with Russian and American astronauts in it and cosmonauts in it working together, and probably Chinese astronauts or their equivalents, and yet we have this conflict going on between the US and Russia right now in Ukraine? Is this conflict – you've mentioned how – you think the Chinese and the Americans are collaborating. I can believe that, particularly with the Wuhan story. Would that be
look
the
at
same
the satellite? The Chinese, for their in part of their surveillance and the social credit stuff, are using US satellites for it. I mean, that story came out a couple of years ago. But I mean, I don't think that, look, I'm not aware of Russians up in a space station, chinking vodka glasses with Americans. I'm not aware of that. As far as I can figure out, the Russians have, somebody who can really explain this much better than me is a guy called Michael Hudson. He's an economist who's explained the difference in the way that the system works in Russia to the way it works in the West. So what we're living under is not just capitalism. It's called finance capitalism, and finance capitalism means that money can buy anything. Money can buy a political party. Money can buy an intelligence service. Money can buy a television station. You know, in other countries, civilized countries, what happens is the government will regulate what those people with the money can do with it. For example, here we're shoveling billions and billions into the pockets of the energy companies right now. I mean, you see it on your bill, but actually it's just the money going straight from the government to the energy companies and straight to the shareholders.
Yep.
Now, that wouldn't happen somewhere like Russia. The government is not there to do that. It's there to regulate and to keep down these big, potentially powerful corporations. In Ukraine, the guy that ran Pinchuk, I think, Viktor Pinchuk, he's number one oligarch there. He was anyway. I'm not sure what the situation is now. 6 months ago, he was. He ran one of the state oil companies, which he'd taken over. And he was told, oh, we're going to have to start collecting tax from you. Do you know what he did? The first six stories of his office block in Kiev, he had a whole team of people arrive. He had got basically like a private army to put steel reinforcing all the way around his building so that no police or anybody, even soldiers, could get into his private oil company headquarters. So that's the way we're operating in London. I mean, it might not look like that, but the finance capitalists have totally taken over. And, you think what happened last week? We had the coking plant in Scunthorpe shut down by the Chinese, right? So if our industry is just an open market, and it has really been, I suppose, ever since Margaret Thatcher. But no, Russia does not operate like that. The Kremlin is most firmly in charge, particularly in terms of the military and the economy. They've said to the oligarchs, you can go and make all your money, fine, do your gangster stuff. But you come anywhere near the Kremlin, we're going to chop your fingers off, and you come anywhere near the military, don't even think about it. We want to make sure that if we're building tanks, those tanks work, right? If we're building aircraft, those aircraft fly well. I mean, we've got this thing called the F-35 we're buying off the Americans now. And, if you turn a tight corner in it, trying to turn the plane too fast, the wings crack. That's how rubbish this equipment is, because it's all done as favors for mates. My mate is working for Lockheed and we'll give him the contract. And that's the way it works here. It's basically a gangster system here. And that's finance capitalism.
And we're told it's the other way around. we're told that the West is all above board and kosher, and we've got these good, all these business relationships with government are all above board and fair. And it's, you know, it's Putin and all his oligarchs who are stealing off the Russian people. And actually, it doesn't appear necessarily to be true. In fact, every sort of story and narrative that comes out of Western press, particularly when it's about Russia, appears to be untrue. So what you've said there is you don't believe that there is actually cooperation between the West and Russia, that this conflict is genuine, and that they've come up against, and we're coming up against an opponent that can match us. And you talked about the F-35. I've seen some of the videos of the MiGs and some of the stuff those pilots are doing without the vertical takeoff systems that they have in the F-35. And I thought, if I was a pilot in a tornado or a typhoon. What, this F-35, I would be quite concerned about coming up against Russian planes and pilots, because they seem to know how to use their equipment. Mm. And we still didn't talk about 9/11. So that's coming up after this break, Tony. So we're definitely starting on 9/11, because I think you have a story that explains from 9/11 and what happened there to how we got here. And I want us to get some secret sterile stuff, some Bilderbergs. And I might even ask, are there any good guys out there? Are there any James Bonds who are going to bring down the Klaus Schwabs? Welcome back to TNT. This is Digging Deeper. I'm here talking to Tony Gosling. We've been sort of chewing the fat and discussing the relationships between the West and the East, the relationship between the West and China, Portland Down, how there may have always been a plan to release a dangerous cold flu or cold virus on the public. And another thing that you brought up with me yesterday in our phone conversations was 9/11. I see you've written about the occult and secret groups. What happened at 9/11? You also mentioned about how there was like a media clear out before the 9/11. It's almost like they were preparing the media environment, the media landscape. So they had all the right people in place. How did we get from 9/11 to almost the permanent enslavement of humanity through digital IDs and vaccine passports? How did we get from there?
Well, you've got about 13 minutes. Well, okay, that's what they want. Whether they're going to get it is a whole other problem, because there's people like us on their case. And the thing is, they can only get away with this stuff if they can bamboozle people. Obviously, our job is to make sure people don't get bamboozled, and certainly, you know, we don't get bamboozled. But look, I already talked about the 1990s, seeing the changes going on in the BBC. Similar things were happening. You know, if you think about programmes like World in Action, investigative documentaries, the Tories made changes in the regulations for the ITV companies, for example, saying that they no longer needed to do so much current affairs investigative programming. And that's the main reason they were doing it, is because it was part of their license. So they could only have a license to broadcast if they did do these brilliant, many of them, investigative programs. I mean, if people have not heard of World in Action, go and have a look at some of the old programs. They really did, you know, fearlessly look into all sorts of brilliant, you know, fascinating subjects. There's people like Roger Cook and the Cook Report, who used to do week after week. He's still around, just about. And Roger, he even managed to do a program where he was doing a program about the Soviet Union in the late 1990s, which was basically collapsing, as Eastern Europe was. And they managed to find some people who would do arms deals, and they were secretly filming them. You know, well, we want to buy loads of guns. And one of the guys actually said, well, what about weapons-grade plutonium? We've got that too, right? And he said that on camera, and they thought, well, this makes the program even more interesting. Let's go and see what they've got. And so they made a program about being offered on the black market SS-20s, which are these, got triple, they've got three, it's a multiple re-entry nuclear weapons, like the cruise missiles. And that program, unfortunately, was wiped. I don't know if anyone actually managed to keep a recording of it. Someone, probably the Russians did. So this stuff was happening, and it was being closed down in the 1990s. As we started, you know, turn the corner in 2000, then suddenly 9/11 happened. And I mean, I think this was the oligarchy in the West, the control freaks, the cults, the Freemasons, these people just simply saying, right, you know, this is going to be our century, and using 9/11 to do it. Now, I mean, one of the best articles on 9/11, if people haven't come across it before, is called 9/11 Israel Did It all the proof in the world. And it's got immense amount of proof looking at, I mean, it may be an exaggeration to say it was just Israel that did it, but to show the massive amount of connections with the Israelis, the Yinon plan to balkanize the Middle East. So the idea being this gives the Americans carte blanche to just come into the Middle East and break it all up. So this allows Israel to expand. You know, that's basically what 9/11 was really about. But then again, you know, it's also about US domination of the world too. So, you know, we talked a little bit about JFK and James Files blowing his head off. You know, that's the kind of result of that assassination in 1963, is you've got a political class that are scared they're going to get their heads blown off if they actually do what's right for the people. And I mean, we've touched just briefly in your break there about climate. This is really, really important thing to understand, I think, that there is a genuine problem, you know, with pollution out there. There's a genuine problem, particularly in Africa, with lack of rainfall at the moment. And so there are some problems with the climate. I think what's happening is exactly with COVID, is it's all been massively exaggerated. And the response to it is actually worse than doing nothing. So, you know, that's the same with COVID. You think about all these jabs that people were given, is you're better off not having one of those and catching it, or you're better off having some ivermectin, or you're better off just isolating. You know, whatever, if you're really elderly or you're vulnerable. So the reaction was worse than, so, you know, the cure was worse than the disease, basically. And the same is true with climate. The same is true, exactly the same is true in the cost of living crisis. So shoveling more money to the energy companies is no way to sort out the cost of living crisis. But the point I'm trying to make here is you've got all these crises coming down the tracks towards us, right? There's a coordination, is what I'm saying, between the different crises. And if you go and have a look at the accelerationists, the people behind this thing called the Dark Enlightenment, that's exactly what they're trying to do. Accelerationism is really an important part of the Great Reset. So this idea is Schwab has put out publicly, but he's not telling you that the people pushing it are the accelerationists. What they want to do is accelerate all these crises to create a big mega crisis. So they can then change this. It's very much like Naomi Klein's shock doctrine. The idea is you bash, 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 and then once people have been bashed, then they're much more open to a new solution, a completely new thing coming along. And that new solution is likely to be this whole system of central bank digital currencies and a new financial system, because this is what will give them, I think, you know, the power that they want, because these people don't crave money. They crave more power. And there is a real sense of evil here for those people who are actually genuinely really just selfish, right? So all they think about is themselves. They've got no thought for the future, the past, although they're going on about, well, we must think about the children, for the future, the children. They don't care about them at all. They're just trying to aggrandize more and more power to themselves because of their lack of, understanding and empathy with others. And the big deal for them is to control the world's money. Now, we haven't even mentioned Bilderberg, which is one of my sort of special subjects, really, because
I'd like to know what the Dark Enlightenment is. Well, we've only got 7 minutes.
It's out there. How long?
7 minutes.
Okay, well, look, but the Dark Enlightenment is a kind of satanic version of the Enlightenment from the 18th century. So the idea is the Enlightenment was all about, look, let's just let people kind of explore all these scientific ideas and let's take the old fashioned stuffy religious restrictions off of it all and let people get on with it and see what they find. And of course, this led to the Industrial Revolution. So lots of good things, but also bad things like people being worked to death in factories in the dark satanic mills. So that's really what the Dark Enlightenment is. And one of the most bizarre things, you could not make this up. In fact, I had one of these moments yesterday, actually, with Mike Graham on Talk Radio, discussing Rosecroft Avenue in Hampstead, where it turned out, I mean, there was some stuff to do with Ian Fleming, basically, in this little place. And I knew a lady that lived there. Turned out Mike Graham was growing up in the same street, would you believe? But anyway, this coincidence is to do with the Dark Enlightenment. And the author of it is a guy I was at school with, a grammar school in Beckenham in Kent, or near West Wickham in Kent. And he was a great mate of mine at school. We used to play war games around his house. And it's turned out he's kind of gone over to the dark side. He's now over in Shanghai. His name's Nick Land, and he's a Nietzschean philosopher that thinks that, you know, you've got to force the world. In fact, what he know what is at the bottom of the Dark Enlightenment stuff, because we are fairly short on time, is that humans should be slaves to machines. So we're going to create a world because machines are easy to kind of control everything, and that humanity is flawed and we keep making mistakes. So if we've got machines in charge, it's very much like 2001, A Space Odyssey, the questions raised in that. But Nick seems to have been taking it on this kind of death trip to the most extreme force. So that's that Dark Enlightenment. But built with Bilderberg, I did a book on that, which is called The Traitors of Arnhem, where I uncovered over many years. Finally, I think, well, once I get to the bottom of a story, you kind of realize it. And this was because there was always a question about why the Bilderberg Group. It was obviously a Nazi organization. It's been chaired by a former SS officer, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, for the first 20 years. Manfred Petrich, who's a Swiss German, although he was born in Argentina, he then moved to Abkhazia. He ran an All Smoke and Mirrors blog, Alice Schallenrausch in German. I met him at one of these Bilderberg conferences. And he showed, look, the first people who were at the first Bilderberg meeting in 1954, they said they were just like German businessmen. No, they were right in the middle of the Nazi Party during the war. They were doing things like, you know, head of propaganda for the Nazi Party, head of acquiring Jewish possessions, right? And stealing the assets of the Jews in the war. So, you know, Manfred actually really, in a way, woke me up to just how Nazi and SS the Bilderbergers really were. And we've only found that out recently. In 1954, you've got Hugh Gaitskell, leader of the Labour Party, sitting down next to this guy. But he didn't know that he was such a central figure in the Nazi Party during the war. So these meetings have been taking place since 54. And what I uncovered, along with some others, was that the reason that the Bilderberg Conference started at that hotel, the Bilderberg Hotel in Oosterbeek, was that the battle in the Second World War, the Battle of Arnhem in the film A Bridge Too Far, was thrown by the Brits, by Carrington, Lord Carrington, who then became Secretary General of NATO, and Bernhard, who was in the British Army at the time. He'd come over from Germany to Holland and then Holland to Britain, and they threw the battle. They made sure that the British lost that battle, and so in a way it was a kind of cheeky in-joke celebration. And the reason that they lost the battle was because the Germans needed time. This is September 1944, and if they'd have won that, they probably would have finished the war by Christmas. And in fact, it went on for another 3 months, which gave the Nazis time to get their wealth all squirreled away nicely so that they could reconstitute as a financial Fourth Reich after the Second World War. So that book is called The Traitors of Arnhem. And it is, so it's available from eBay. The best place, if you need to go somewhere to just get a steer to where these various books are, that's just Bilderberg.org, www.bilderberg.org. And I was very pleased to get a call just after Christmas from Charlie Skelton from The Guardian to say, we've discovered where this year's Bilderberg is going to be. It's in Lisbon, beginning on the 17th of May, 2023. And so it's quite nice to get a steer well beforehand. Last year was no. I mean, we just found out once the Bilderberg meeting had already started where it was going to be, which was Washington, D.C. And guess who was there? Jake Sullivan, the head of the CIA, the head of the Office of NES Assessment, the head of NATO, all signing off the Nord Stream pipeline operation at Bilderberg in Washington.
Yeah, the Nazis never went away. I think that's really, really clear right now. I'm about to speak to George Eliasson. He tells me about Ukrainian heritage Nazis who are infiltrated in governments around the world. Tony, we've come to the end of the show. It's been a fascinating conversation. I knew it would be. Or more of a fascinating listen for me, because I've learned a lot. I love this show for that reason. Definitely would like to invite you back. And yeah, I'm going to have a word of Patrick.
If I could just say one thing, accelerationism, look it up. The Dark Enlightenment, look it up. That's what brings all these crises together.